This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. One of the biggest corporate frauds in history, the Volkswagen scandal, the first deep dive into the VW emissions cheating story. That's today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Jack Ewing is the European economics correspondent for the New York Times, based in Frankfurt, Germany. Spent more than 20 years in Germany covering business and economics, including a 10-year stint with Business Week magazine. The new book, Faster, Higher, Farther, the Volkswagen scandal, and he's coming to us right now from Frankfurt. Welcome, Jack.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you know, I look back as at the book, and I'm saying that this kind of the law of physics meets corporate culture. Impossible doesn't exist. The requirements to treat emissions versus the corporate culture of Volkswagen, is that kind of the story? Give us the overview first.
Yeah, that's it exactly. I mean, I think that's the big takeaway from the whole Volkswagen story. This is what happens when you set very ambitious goals, but they're not matched with values, with sort of some ethical red lines that you don't go over. And what's kind of incredible about Volkswagen is time and again, it wasn't just one case of wrongdoing. Time and again, they reached crossroads where they could have done the right thing, but they never did. They always did the wrong thing, and it wound up costing them, you know, $22 billion.
Is it a case of bad people, or is it a case of bad incentive systems making good people do bad things?
Yeah, the latter. It was, I've met some of the people who were involved in this, and they are basically totally normal people who were trying to do their jobs. Many of them felt really bad about what was going on, but they had no place at Volkswagen where they could turn to, and they felt that the organization was against them.
And is it the players that drove this, the Ferdinand Piëch, who was CEO and then ran the supervisory board, and the CEO after him, Martin Winterkorn?
Right. Yes, definitely. I think particularly Ferdinand Piëch, he was the grandson of Ferdinand Porsche, who was the inventor of the Beetle. And Piëch became head of Volkswagen in the early 90s, later became chairman of the supervisory board. So he dominated the company for 20 years. And I argue in the book that he was the one that he was a very dictatorial, unforgiving type of guy. And I argue in the book he's the one who created the corporate culture where this scandal could breed.
All right, give us the one-minute overview of what the issues were in terms of what they did with the emissions.
Volkswagen decided they wanted to become the biggest car company in the world. They couldn't do that without getting a lot bigger in the United States. They decided their unique selling point was going to be diesel, and then they discovered that the diesels they had or were developing couldn't meet U.S. Standards for emissions. So they were at a point where they either had to spend a lot more money on improving the emissions, or they invented a software that could recognize when a test was taking place and just turn up the emissions controls temporarily to pass the test and then turn them back down when the car was on the road. And that's what they did.
Pretty amazing. Is this a case where the cover-up was worse than the crime?
That was certainly a big part of it. That greatly added to the cost, because the Volkswagen first started selling cars with this illegal software at the end of 2008, the 2009 model year. And around early 2014, there was a study by West Virginia University which raised some questions about the emissions. And Volkswagen then went into cover-up mode and spent a year and a half basically feeding false information to the regulators, stringing them along, trying to keep the whole thing from coming out. If they had just, in the very beginning, put their hands up and said, mea culpa, we did bad, we'll take our punishment, the whole thing would have cost way less than it wound up. But by the time they finally got cornered, mostly by the California regulators, then they had used up any goodwill they had with the regulators, and they'd also extended the period of time when they had these illegal cars on the road.
How much do you think this relates to the fact, I was kind of surprised to learn this, that in Europe there isn't much enforcement, and so maybe they didn't take it as serious as they should in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, I think that's another big takeaway from this, because the Europeans often sort of present themselves as the most, you know, the greenest people and the best environmental standards. And one thing that this scandal has exposed is that on paper, Europe had pretty good standards, but they were totally unenforced, and there's basically no penalties for car companies to cheat. And so in a way, if you're a car company, you know, why not try to get away with it? The worst that can happen is you have to do a recall. And I think the big mistake that Volkswagen made is when they went to the U.S. with this diesel technology, they acted as if they were still in Europe, where the rules didn't mean that much. They totally underestimated the penalties that you might face in the United States.
Another thing that I was interested in from the book is you assume the EPA is all-powerful in enforcing this, but one, the sort of the David Goliath, the West Virginia University, and you can talk about it, and then which the CARB, the California folks.
Yeah, well, the West Virginia, they have a center at the university there in Morgantown that specializes in emissions, and they've been doing that for 20 years, have a very good reputation in this kind of niche area of academia. And they got a $70,000 grant, in other words, about as much as you'd spend on a high-end Audi to test Volkswagen cars. They also tested BMW. And the graduate students who were using portable equipment to test the cars on the road quickly noticed that there was a huge difference between how much the cars polluted in the lab and how much on the road. And they published a study. They didn't suspect wrongdoing, or they weren't sure it was wrongdoing, but they published a study, and then the California Air Resources Board, which is the air quality regulator in California, picked up on the study and then sort of very persistently started asking questions of Volkswagen and doing their own tests, looking at a whole bunch of cars. And it took a while, but eventually they cornered Volkswagen, and in September 2015, 18 months after the West Virginia study came out, Volkswagen finally confessed.
Now, this involved 11 million cars, which is mind-boggling. Tell folks the dollar amount of fines they've had to pay.
Well, just in the United States, it's about $22 billion. And that's it's criminal penalties. Volkswagen has pleaded guilty as a corporation. There's fines, civil fines, and then there was a big class action suit by owners. And that's another aspect of this, was that not only was there the cheating software and the cover-up, but Volkswagen had this huge clean diesel advertising campaign.
Yeah.
So that turned the whole thing into a big consumer fraud. So $15 billion of that $22 billion is going to either to the owners or to make up for the pollution that these cars caused.
On the human side, what's the extent of damage of the nitrogen oxide that was released, the pollution impact?
Well, you know, it's pretty bad stuff. Nitrogen oxide, first of all, it's actually a bunch of gases called nitrogen oxides, and diesel engines produce them in great quantities because diesel engines burn very hot. So they're constantly fusing nitrogen and oxygen molecules in the air, and it's coming out the tailpipe. And it's the main component of smog, which is why California is so concerned about it. It causes asthma. If you have asthma, it can cause you to get an attack. It causes heart attacks, causes cancer. It's pretty nasty stuff. And the Volkswagens that were programmed to cheat were putting out more of these nitrogen oxides than a modern long-haul truck. So it was a lot.
What's the degree of brand destruction to VW, think, long-term? Obviously, the green positioning, the diesel is clean fuel, but what about the brand itself?
Well, the sales haven't totally collapsed. In fact, they're kind of coming back in the United States, and Audi, which belongs to Volkswagen, just said that they had record sales in the United States. So they seem to be coming through it okay. I mean, I'm sort of skeptical whether that's going to last forever. One reason the sales are good is because they're doing a lot of incentives, they're keeping the prices down. But so far, the company, you know, the sales have not collapsed. I think the bigger problem is that the whole auto industry now is in a period of technological transformation. You've got self-driving cars, electric cars are coming. It's a time when it's a dangerous time for all the conventional car makers because you may see new technologies that have a big impact on the industry. And so the companies need to be investing in that. They need to be investing a lot in research and development, and Volkswagen now has $22 billion less to do that.
You say in the book that after they admitted guilt in the U.S., they still pleaded, they still were hardline against settling in Europe. What's happened in Europe?
Yeah, well, in Europe, they don't have class action suits the same way that they do in the United States. So if you're an owner, you basically have to sue Volkswagen by yourself. So that's a tough and risky road, and they're using European laws. They're arguing that under European laws, what they did was not illegal in Europe. So they're digging in their heels, and I think the reason is that if they had to pay anywhere near what they did in the United States in Europe per car, it would ruin the company. So they have to. They really have no choice but to totally dig in their heels and try to keep this from going any further.
Listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. You can go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, access our archive of podcasts. Next, we'll talk about the technology and the culture behind the cheating.
Now, the club for Biz Talk Radio listeners and your biz. The Biz TV Club is where you can watch some of your favorite Biz Talk Radio hosts and others on the go, on demand, on Android, desktop, Roku, and more. Never miss an episode of your favorite Biz TV shows and have the 24/7 Biz Talk Radio stream at your fingertips. Watch anytime, anywhere for just $5.95 a month with a free trial by using promo code RADIO. Go to BizRadioClub.com.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
Attention hernia mesh implant surgery patients. A popular hernia surgery product has been linked to a high rate of complications and injuries. If you or a loved one had a surgery where a hernia mesh was implanted and have experienced pain, infection, adhesions, mesh migration or product rejection, needed replacement or revision surgery, or other adverse reactions, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Time is limited to file a claim. Call now for your free consultation. Call 800-706-6897. 800-706-6897.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1769. 855-325-1769. That's 855-325-1769.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest from Germany, New York Times economic reporter Jack Ewing. Before we get into the technology, I wanted the PR fallout. They did a terrible tone-deaf job continuously. And I guess you said initially they were offering $500 prepaid debit cards and things like that.
Yeah, that was the initial response was pretty clumsy. It took Volkswagen a couple of months just to sort of figure out what they should do. You get the impression it was pretty much chaos until then. On all fronts, and they tried to appease the U.S. Buyers, the U.S. owners, with this little bonus and a credit card that they could spend. But I think most that kind of backfired because most owners said, you know, this is nothing compared to the damage we've suffered.
In fact, yeah. John Iannuzzi was nodding when you started that he got was offered that prepaid debit card. John, tell folks, he's our producer, John Iannuzzi, what your settlement is. He actually has a VW Jetta diesel.
It ended up being $8,000, or the option to sell the car back, but that just was too convoluted. So it'll be $8,000 when they come up with the fix, which is some time away.
And so you don't know yet when you're actually going to get the money.
Nope.
Jack, do they have $22 billion in cash on their balance sheet, along with enough to function, finance inventory and R&D?
Yeah, they have enough money now, so there's no imminent danger that the company's going to go under. I think it's more of a long-term thing, that this is something that's going to be a dead weight on their finances for some time, and that is hurting their reputation, and there's still continuous news flow still around this scandal. It's been almost 2 years since it became public. But just yesterday, I was writing about another guy that got arrested, a former engineer. And so this is something that I think is going to be, you know, sort of hacking away at the company's reputation for some time and costing money the whole way. Just lawyers, they've never said how much they're spending on lawyers, but it's got to be in the hundreds of millions.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday in the New York Times. You had the Audi engineer was arrested. I want you to explain, and so people can relate to it at least, the technology behind what they call these defeat devices, which was designed to bypass the engine control software where it starts. I was just fascinated by how you could do this literally to the minute when the tests were going on and then revert back.
Yeah, well, it was pretty sophisticated. I mean, you sort of have to give, in a backhanded way, give Volkswagen credit for how sophisticated the whole thing was. All cars these days have a computer, a pretty capable computer that's hooked up to the engine and is constantly adjusting the parameters, the fuel and the airflow and the emission system. And so they programmed this computer to recognize the test cycle that regulators use when they test a car. When CARB or somebody tests a car, they bring it into a garage, they put it on rollers, they run the car as if it was on the road, and they have a fixed cycle that's supposed to simulate highway, city, country driving, and that pattern is public knowledge. Every car maker knows what it is. So Volkswagen programmed these computers so they could actually recognize this pattern. You could plot it on a graph, and the cars would recognize numerous different test cycles used around the world, and then it would, when it saw, I'm being tested, the car would then crank up the pollution controls so that it looked like it was totally clean. And then out on the road, the car, the controls would be dialed way back to save fuel and to provide faster acceleration and also to protect the components which were not really able to provide clean emissions on a continuous basis.
Do you blame the regulators for doing these under lab conditions? I know the West Virginia folks did it on the road, actually.
Yeah, and I think that is an issue. I mean, I didn't get in too deeply in the book, but you know, going back to the 90s, there's an EPA engineer named Leo Breton, which I talk about in the book, and he invented this method for testing emissions on the road, which is pretty complicated when you think about it. I mean, it's a lot easier from a scientific point of view to just stick the car in a garage and stick something up the tailpipe. You can control all the conditions, the air pressure, the temperature. Get out on the road, and there's tons of variables. But Leo Breton said, you know, does this lab test really telling us what's going on when the car's out on the road? I don't think so. But he ran into a lot of resistance at the EPA about using this as part of the standard tests. You know, scientists, engineers, they like the consistency of the labs. And I think that did made the whole manipulation that Volkswagen did possible.
The what was this driven by ultimately? Is there cost benefits? Is it performance benefits? What drove them to do this?
I think, yeah, it was partly because they weren't able to come up with a technical solution in time to meet the schedule that where they wanted to start selling these cars in the United States. This is going back to 2006, 2007 when they were developing the diesels for the United States market. And if they had had the technology, it probably would have added a couple hundred dollars to the cost of the car, and that's very significant in the range that the Passat and the Jetta competes in against the Honda Accord and the Toyota Camry and so on. A couple hundred dollars makes a big difference. They didn't want to spend that. I think it also had something to do with the fact that it was an easy solution, and they didn't think they were going to get caught. And if they thought if they did get caught, well, maybe it would be a small fine. They totally underestimated the risk that they were taking.
Is there a software fix? How do we know that this will no longer go on?
Well, I think the regulators are certainly more alert than they were. I think, will it not go on anymore? I kind of doubt it because there's really a long record of car makers cheating on emissions tests, but certainly the awareness of the public and the regulators has been highly elevated by this. Plus, there's a big deterrent effect to the other car makers from seeing what Volkswagen is going through right now. So that may be the most powerful effect of all. But, you know, ultimately, I think the problem will go away when we have electric cars on the road.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the culture. Give us a little the historical overview. I mean, I was surprised that this was a people's car that Hitler had initially wanted, the VW, but the two families, Porsche and PS, et cetera, the overview of that.
Right, yeah, well, Hitler, when he came to power, it annoyed him that Americans were driving around in Model Ts and Volkswagen didn't have anything like that. Only rich people drove cars. I mean, Germany had nothing like that. Only rich people drove cars, so he got Ferdinand Porsche, who was a well-known designer and engineer, to design the Volkswagen. And they never actually built many when the Nazis were in power, but afterwards they put a British officer in charge of the factory in Wolfsburg, which they had built to produce the car, and he said, well, let's get this going again. And then it was a big hit because it was a very simple practical car for the post-war period. And I think one of the, looking at it from a business point of view, was then an incredible case of rebranding when they brought it to the United States. They got Doradane and Birnbach to come up with these very clever ads that turned Volkswagen into this whole sort of counterculture phenomenon. At one time, it was the best-selling import in the United States. And people totally forgot about the whole Nazi thing. And it became the car that you drove to Woodstock, and the hippies were driving around in buses. And, so it's really kind of a unique history among car companies.
You listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We'll be back with our next segment. We'll look at the fallout. Has VW changed?
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Jack Ewing, the author of Faster, Higher, Farther, the VW Scandal, really the first detailed look inside it. In finishing up the culture of the organization, very hierarchical, and it lacked a compliance culture. You put that blame firmly on the PS?
Yeah, I do, because, first of all, there was no real robust compliance organization. I mean, they had compliance people, but it really wasn't a strong enough compliance department for the size of the company and the technology that they were dealing with. And there was also a lack of places that people who might have had reservations about what was going on, there was really no place for them to turn. They have an ombudsman system, but nobody took it seriously. The people who had reservations really felt that there was nothing they could do without hurting their careers. But I think the most important thing was the example set from the top, because, you know, you can have a code of ethics, which Volkswagen did, but if people are looking at the behavior of the top managers and seeing that they are not really following the code of ethics themselves, then it becomes meaningless. And Volkswagen had had other scandals before. There was a big prostitution scandal, actually, just about the time that the new engines were being developed. And there was never really any reform. You know, a couple people took the fall, and then people kind of went on as before. There was no real soul-searching. And I think that, and I argue this in the book, that sent a very powerful signal to the people in the rank and file that about what kind of standards were expected of them.
I hadn't realized this, but they owned and bought Bentley, Bugatti, Lamborghini, really high-end cars. How did those fit in? What was the logic?
Well, Piëch, when he came in, I mean, the other thing you have to say about him, along with all the negative things, was that he did turn Volkswagen around. When he came in, the company was close to bankruptcy, and he really did a fantastic job of not only improving the products, but raising the sort of status of Volkswagen from just kind of the middle-class automaker to a company that could make really exciting cars. And that was the logic behind buying Bentley and Lamborghini and Bugatti, was they wanted to show that we're not only capable of making Passats, but we can also make these really exotic sports cars. I think there was also an element of just Piëch, you know, it was fun for him to own these cars. But there was a certain company logic to it. And, you know, you have to say that to a greater extent it succeeded. Volkswagen did become the largest car company in the world for a while anyways.
He had his mistress, then wife, on the board, had 12 kids with several women. He's kind of an interesting guy, eh?
Yeah, and I think also that, you know, just the way he managed his personal life, you know, at another point he started an affair with his cousin's wife and had a couple of children with her. And, you know, he's a guy that obviously just didn't, you know, follow the same rules that most of the rest of us do. And, you know, I think when your subordinates look at that, it does have an effect. And he just lived in his own kind of moral and ethical universe, I think you could say.
Did he take responsibility for this? I mean, in the book, you get a sense he left town right before the sheriff got there.
Yeah. No, he's never, he said very little about it, almost nothing publicly. There's been some leaks about what he has told the investigators, but he lost, which was very unusual for him, but he lost a power struggle just a couple of months before this broke. And that meant that he left the supervisory board where he was chairman, along with his wife, who he installed on the board, and pretty much exited having any influence on the company. And I don't think he planned that, but it turned out to be good timing from his point of view, because by the time the scandal broke, then he was gone. He was off the stage and did not really have to accept responsibility.
Okay, so this company was very centralized. Goals were forced down, and nothing was considered impossible. Weak compliance. Has the company changed?
Well, they say they're changing. I mean, I'm a little skeptical, more than a little skeptical, I'd say. I mean, it's a tough company to change. I think maybe the biggest problem is that it's still pretty much run by insiders. They didn't bring in a new management team. A few people left, but the chief executive, Matthias Müller, has been at Volkswagen his entire career, and I think it's very difficult to remake a company from top to bottom when you have people that have grown up in the culture themselves. And there's been some other bad signs. They hired a Supreme Court judge from Germany to set up a better compliance system, and she lasted a little more than a year. And you just have a feeling that the whole thing's not going that well.
On the incentive system, have they reduced incentives for people to go over the lines? And what's the status of the battle with Toyota? Because I hadn't realized they'd surpassed them when this happened.
Yeah, well, on Toyota, they had it's sort of been toggling back and forth which one is the biggest. They surpassed Toyota in 2015 and then dropped back. You know, we're talking about a couple hundred thousand cars here, so it can go back and forth from quarter to quarter. I think at the end of 2016, they were the biggest, but if I'm not mistaken, they've fallen behind Toyota again, and I think even behind GM. So, but the point is, it's one of the top three companies, and they're all pretty close in numbers. And remind me the second question there.
What was the second question, Jack? We'll edit that out. Let me ask you this question. And you alluded to this at the beginning. You've got Tesla with market value greater than GM or Ford. I noticed in the book Audi and Porsche seem to generate more value than all the VW business, which is obviously a lot more volume. Is growth for growth's sake no longer makes sense? I mean, should they all be just gravitating towards the high-value end of the market and forget the volume side or the mid-size or the low end?
Well, I think if you were just going for profits, that would probably be the best strategy. But Volkswagen's another unique thing about the company is that the supervisory board, half the seats belong to workers, which is true of all German companies. But at Volkswagen, the state of Lower Saxony, which is where Volkswagen is located, where the headquarters is located, owns 20% of the company and has another two seats. So basically, the politicians and the workers have a majority of the company. So it's very, very difficult to lay off workers. And most of them are churning out Volkswagen brand cars, which are not very profitable, but keep people busy. And so I think the idea that they would focus just on their high end, that's just not an option at all. They, in a way, they have to be as big as they can. And that was really a big part of what was driving their strategy the whole time.
Interesting. Let me ask you to elaborate a little bit on that, because people don't understand here the role or the power of labor over there. And from what you just said, is it a bad thing? I got sort of a sense that it was a good thing in the book, but when you say that it's sort of driving the strategy towards lower value economics, maybe it's not a good thing, that level of power?
I think it can be a good thing. It's called co-determination, where at any publicly traded company, any company above a certain size, half the seats on the supervisory board belong to the workers, and the chairman of the supervisory board, who represents the owners, has a tie-breaking vote. So the shareholders still have a slight majority. I think oftentimes it can work very well because there's tension in coming to decisions about things, but once you go through that process, then you have the workers on your side. And I've seen this a number of times where companies were in crises and you had to do some tough things, and after a negotiating process, then the workers got behind it, and it happened very quickly and decisively. I think the problem at Volkswagen is that you then have the political influence, which gives the workers a majority. So you don't have that balance of power anymore. And the other problem at Volkswagen is of the shareholders, most of them are either Porsche family or the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Qatar, and you have, I think, around 10% free float. So you don't have, you know, the fund managers, the outsiders who might be calling for change, they don't really have any influence. So it's a very kind of closed, incestuous system, which I think is not healthy.
Interesting, and maybe bears some worry for the future if the change isn't real after going through this level of crisis, which leads me to, within the last 50 seconds of this segment, did you find commonalities between Enron collapse, Lehman collapse, those kinds of scandalous collapses?
I think the common element was always that you had managers pushing people very hard without the balance of a clear ethical framework. I don't really think there's anything wrong with setting stretch goals for being ambitious. I mean, that's what business is all about. But you have to be very clear to your people, these are our values, these are the certain red lines that you're not going to cross, and if you see someone crossing them, come to me, or here's the person you can go to talk to about it. And that was what was missing at Volkswagen.
And our final segment, we'll look at where the industry's going, and since we're talking about Germany, we'll look at the G20 summit, Trump-Merkel relationship, when we get back.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092, 800-223-0092, 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Biz Talk Radio.
Final segment with Jack Ewing, New York Times Euro Economic Correspondent. On the environmental regulations, are they too tough on business and growth? And, you know, Trump is talking about rolling back regulations, gutting EPA almost. What are your thoughts on that?
I think my biggest concern would be that U.S. companies will not be competitive in these future technologies. I mean, people tend to look at it as regulations, it's a burden, but the fact is that regulations or no, the world is moving towards clean energy, and other countries are investing in it. And if the United States doesn't invest in it, then at some point we're going to find that we're no longer competitive. That's the thing that I would worry about the most. You know, it's very easy to just keep driving SUVs, and, you know, we'll get away with that for a while, but at a certain point it may not be possible anymore or economically sensible. And then when we have to buy electric cars from China, what's going to happen? I think that's the biggest worry.
It's interesting, too. We've beaten up VW now for cheating. Is there a little bit of hypocrisy because we drive these huge gas guzzlers around?
Well, certainly you hear that from people in Germany. I mean, in terms of the pollution, the diesels do pollute more of these nitrogen oxides than a gasoline car. Americans don't drive very many diesel passenger cars. But, yes, in terms of energy consumption, Europe is way ahead of the United States in terms of conservation and just overall consumption. I think Germans use a little more than half as much energy per person as Americans do.
Wow.
That's, again, something that America can get away with because of the resources that we have. But maybe not forever. And so I was saying that the countries that have to deal with scarcity are the ones that are going to actually be ahead when these new technologies become absolutely essential.
Okay, you're on the ground there. What's the perspective within Germany, within Europe, on how the G20 summit's going and how Angela Merkel and Trump are getting along?
Yeah, well, I've never quite figured out what Trump has with Merkel, but he doesn't seem to like her. He's bashed Germany. He's complained that Germans compete unfairly with the United States, which I don't quite get because Germany is a huge investor in the United States. BMW's biggest factory anywhere in the world is in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
And they have high labor costs.
Yeah, and Spartanburg, by the way, went big for Trump. But so I don't quite get that. I think it certainly... In Europe, Trump is not very popular, and Merkel, I think, started out thinking maybe she could deal with him, but quickly realized that's not going to happen. And so she's been distancing herself from him. And as my colleagues at the Times were writing today, the result is, I think, that the United States is becoming isolated.
Is a disintegration of the EU coming?
I think the EU actually seems to be making a comeback. It certainly looked pretty bad even a couple of months ago with Brexit, you know, Britain leaving the European Union. That's still a threat, of course, but people were very worried that Marine Le Pen, the far-right leader in France, was going to become president. That didn't happen. The European economy is actually doing very well. So I think, ironically, also, they sort of looked at what happens when you have a populist leader looking at Trump and what was happening in the United States. And I think, in a way, that had kind of a shock value in Europe, and people pulled away from that. The populist leaders lost influence.
May have helped Macron. May have helped Macron win in France.
Right.
Let's finish up with looking at the future. I was surprised about Volvo's decision that they're going to move away from the internal combustion engine. They're not a niche player. They're big guys. The impact of that?
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. I think it was the first time a major sort of mainstream car maker had said, we're going to go all electric. I mean, in the beginning, it's going to be a lot of hybrids also, not just battery-powered cars, and they're still going to sell gasoline diesel cars for a while. But still, making that commitment, I think, was a pretty big step, and it was pretty bold of Volvo. And I think it puts pressure on all the car makers to really think about what's their strategy. Do they want to hold on to these conventional technologies, or do they really want to go all in for the future technologies? Volvo is small compared to GM. Maybe it's a little easier for them to make that decision. It's also a premium manufacturer. Still, it was quite significant, and I think it made it's going to have a big impact on the auto industry.
Do you see it as a risky move?
It's somewhat risky, but I think Volvo, with their customers, they sell to the type of people who care about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
They sell a lot of cars, outside the United States, where fuel economy is very important. And I think, in a way, Volvo is in a better position to do that type of thing than big car company, because they are relatively small. It's easier for them to change the culture, and they can, in a way, sort of take advantage of the fact that they're more flexible than these behemoth car makers.
What do you see basically is the ultimate impact of Tesla, Apple, Google, that kind of thrust on tech companies coming from the outside of the industry?
Well, it's hard to predict, but certainly it's a threat to the established car makers, because it could well be. If you've driven an electric car, they're fun to drive. They've got great pickup, they're quiet, they don't smell. I think most people, when they first get in one, they say, oh, gee, this is kind of fun. And I think there could be a point when all of a sudden those cars start to sell much more quickly. And that's a big threat to the established car makers, because it's a lot easier to build an electric car than it is to build a gasoline or a diesel. And it's a moment when new companies can get into the car business, which is typically a very difficult industry to break into. You see that already with Tesla, and you may see some other new entrants. We don't know what Apple's going to do, but if they ever decided to build an Apple car, that would be
an Apple car.
look what the iPhone did to the mobile phone business.
Yeah.
Theoretically, they could do the same thing with cars, hire companies in China or wherever to put it together from their design. Who knows?
To me, I would say they should focus on car software. We're down to the last 20, 30 seconds. Give us the latest on the VW scandal and the total liability. You mentioned potentially $50 billion.
Yeah, well, I think that going forward, they still have a lot of suits they have to worry about. Shareholders are suing. There's a class action in Britain, which does allow some class action suits. There's one in Australia. So that's going to be a financial threat for some time to come, and it's not something that's going to go away soon for Volkswagen.
Very fast hour here. Thanks to Jack Ewing calling in from Frankfurt, Germany. That book, Faster, Higher, Farther, The Volkswagen Scandal. And Jack, it's going to be made into a movie produced by Leonardo DiCaprio, eh?
Yeah, that's correct, and it seems to be moving forward, so I'm very happy about that.
Our next show, tech journalist Brian Merchant on the secret history of the iPhone as it approaches its 10th anniversary, just talking about Apple. Recently, this has been Biz Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Jack Ewing of the New York Times. Thanks to our national audience for hosting. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.